I mean, we can give something of an intro. We always do, but it doesn't have to be super structured.
Okay, take it away.
I had to get my yawn out.
Do you ever feel tired and bored with life? Come here, nothing will change.
You'll be in good company. You're listening to AA Smug, a podcast for creative writers. Hi, welcome back to another episode of AA Smug. We're back, finally, after a little hiatus. I'm April.
And I'm Andrea, and this month's word is petrichor, a distinctive scent usually described as earthy, pleasant, or sweet, produced by rainfall on very dry ground. And the reason I chose that word today was because it rained and it was really yummy and smelly.
I love petrichor.
Yes. And then there is actually a second word of the month because we're celebrating our friendship this week and this month. And it made me laugh. It's called impignorate, and it means to pawn or it's mortgaged. Impignorate. Yes. To pawn something or to mortgage something.
It's mortgaged.
But
that's funny.
Yeah, so either of those will count for points today.
Okay. Okay. Petrichor and it's in impignorate. See, looking at it, you would think it's like impignorate or something.
Yeah, no, it's impignorate. Like, I have to go impignorate this elephant because this elephant sits on our little shelf all the time. And my aunt finally passed away, God bless her soul. And I'm going to go impignorate this elephant because I do not want this elephant.
Exactly. What a vivid description.
This elephant has caused a lot of tahubahoo in our family.
I just want to get rid of it and be free to sit in peace and sniff the petrichor.
Some days I wanted to fenestrate the elephant, but I did not impignorate it.
It's not very recherche, no. So it's got to go away.
Anyway, what are we doing this week? April, you take that away.
Okay, since it is our month of friendship celebration, yay, 16 yay. Years of friendery, we are, of course, talking about friendship. So we're going to talk about writing with your best friend. I know we've talked about co-authoring, but you know how people always say, don't move in with your best friend because you'll end up killing each other, it will ruin your friendship. I almost think the same thing could be said about writing a book with your friend, unless, of course, you have a super recherché friendship like Andrea and I do, then you can survive it. It wasn't always easy, but we made it through. So we're going to talk about how we wrote together without hating or otherwise harming each other too
Who
much.
Who said I never hated you?
And
I'm just
well, anyway. And we'll have a few other fun little exercises along the way while I sit and ponder Andrea's lack of loyalty.
I didn't say there was a lack of loyalty. It may be just implying that I impignorated some of it.
Uh-huh. I'm sitting here pursing my lips, raising my brows at you.
No. But when you are writing with someone and then that someone happens to be your best friend and you're just like used to walking the world together hand in hand, skipping with pigtails, and you're just like, everything's just so fine with us, we're the bestest of friends. And then you have in your mind this idea for a very certain scene and you're writing this book with your best friend and your best friend has the antipodes of that scene in her mind. And then she comes along and she's like, no, I had a completely different idea for that. And then you see your idea slip through your fingers like star systems through Darth Vader's grip. And you're like, what is happening? That was my best scene in the whole entire world. It was brand new clean. It was my fresh scene. Why? What do you do when that happens?
I know.
I'm asking.
What do you do when your best friend impignorates your scene?
Exactly.
Okay, so here's what we learned. It was a little bumpy at first. I think we used to argue more instead of reason it out and kind of, well, no, because I think that it needs to be this. Well, I think it needs to be that. But we always, after a little bit of grumbling and whining, we came to a compromise, and we did talk about how eventually we came up with our what's best for the book rule. But the thing that I think is kind of unique is that through our writing, I think we learned how to communicate as friends and as people better, as strangely as that might sound, because we're business partners and we're friends, and we learned the importance of talking a scene through and of compromising. And it is kind of a life lesson thing, I think, that we learned with each other also to talk things through and try to see each other's perspective. And usually in writing, we would find a compromise, or we would, you know, some form of understanding. And in friendship, I think usually it's just a matter of really understanding each other. Because usually every disagreement results from misunderstanding or stubbornness. And a lot of times it's just, hey, I want the scene to be this way. And there's a point where you just have to let go and trust. Hey, if you want, we both want the same thing here. So we're going to go with, again, what's best for the book. And I know we've talked about that before, but it really helped us.
You got to win some and you lose some. And for me, I lost a lot. I mean, you basically got your way every single time.
No. I don't recall this, but
you got your way every single time.
Okay, because I kind of thought you got your way every time.
Nonsense.
Okay.
50-50. 50, okay, 50-50. I was going to say, I was like, did writing together teach us communication, or did communication teach us how to write together? I don't know which one came first in our lives, but what I take away from this is we were teenagers and we learned how to communicate better than most like 30-year-old married people, which is impressive to me.
Yeah, I was telling you about how I was at a coffee shop last week, I guess. And I was listening to these people's meeting that they were having. And I was impressed with their back and forth. And it kind of brought me back to that plotting you and I, well, even now, I guess we do it. They were doing a good job of communicating. And I appreciated that. I was like, well, it's good to know that adults these days can communicate without getting angry and offended with each other. And I don't know exactly what my point is, except that it reminded me of you and I in our conversations.
Of the olden days. Because
you know,
now like, we just don't even bother arguing.
We don't even have to talk now. It's just, hey, what about, yeah, brilliant.
I was going to say something, but I don't remember what it was now. Something about talking and communicating and I think it's when you team up with your best friend to write a book versus some random writing acquaintance, you have a little bit more of that teamwork involved, where you're like, it feels like you're Frodo and Samwise Gamgee going like, let's go on this journey together. And it's like, yes, we will write the most awesomest book in the world and we are going to do it as best friends. Mm-hmm. And whereas I've never written with another person, but I kind of imagine it's a little bit more business-like, where it's like, you do this and I kind of wonder if half the time maybe you have more disagreements and you can't come to compromises with them because it's a little bit more, I don't know how that even works. It sounds scary.
I know, that's interesting. If anybody out there in our vast audience has written a book with somebody, tell us how you do it. That would be a fun thing to talk about.
Yeah. Cause like some, I heard on one podcast that they tackled different chapters or different chapters, but it's like, isn't that going to have a completely different flavor every chapter? I mean,
yeah, unless you had somebody going over and editing and like giving it all coherent flow.
Yeah. Editing with their own like flavor, so like a flavor blanket that goes over all of these different styles right. and wraps them together. Yeah. One thing that we've been complimented on is that our readers can't tell which scene was written by who. By whom? Mm-hmm.
I think so.
It is that our styles blend together so beautifully and complementary, if I do say so myself, that they can't tell that it was written by two different people, which is one of the highest compliments I think that we could both get.
Yeah, and I think that that comes back to us finding a style of our own together that's different from our styles we have apart, but kind of a meshing of the two.
Yeah, except me trying to write a scene as you today ended up being, I think, an us scene.
Yeah, that might be the best we can muster. Mine, I don't know if mine is anything anybody would write, so no offense to you. And I guess we can mention here that that's our little fun thing we have planned for today, since we're talking about it already, that Andrea and I had the task of writing a scene as each other. So we just laid out, she threw out random suggestion or like theme. Somebody's baking a cake for their best friend and their best friend finds out. I think that was the only parameter.
There's nothing else.
That was it. Nothing else. Any setting, any person, not a pre-existing set of characters or anything. So we just had to reach into the abyss and pull something out and write about it. And like all writers, we procrastinated until the very last second. And we're writing these scenes up until like practically an hour ago. So,
well, yeah, literally yeah. I finished my type, done, and picked up the phone to call you to start our podcast.
Yes. It's yes.
Just terrible. So,
but it should be fun. This is raw, fresh off the press. It's silly stuff.
I think it's a good nod to our friendship as a whole, because we like to be really stupid and silly, and we can't take ourselves seriously half the time. So, I think I think in true fashion, true friendship fashion, we did ourselves justice, I think. Hopefully. Okay, I haven't read yours.
We'll say that after. I don't know if mine did anything justice. Today was a day. I had to run away this evening and just get out for a while. And I kind of wanted to go write, but I ended up, I had to go look for a gift for my mother, which I didn't find. And then I ended up going grocery shopping because we needed stuff. And that wasn't very restful. But I digress.
Well, you got out at least. At least you got out. This could be stressful.
I got out of my cage.
I had a good day because you sent me the first few chapters of my most favorite book in the whole entire world, A Wife for Benjamin Bradley, which is not published and probably won't be published for 10 years, only because we have so many other projects that you probably won't get around to it. Mm-hmm. But when it is published, I will buy 10 of them.
Yeah, maybe I'll just publish that one and forget everything else that I've done. You know,
I wouldn't
just like,
be mad.
Whatever, we are expediting this book. This is it.
I wouldn't be mad.
That would be your dream
come
true. If you
put all of our books on hold, I wouldn't even be. I'd be like, that's fine. You're making Benjamin Bradley. Well, you go right on ahead. No, it's a really great book, and I had to keep referring back to the first few chapters to try to write this scene as April. Mm-hmm. I honestly don't even there were key we'll talk about it after I read it, but there were just keywords I kept trying to slip in. Back to how do you write with your best friend and remain friends? I think that you should have some ground rules, so to say sounds like a fancy word. It's a so to say. It's like a recherche party. It's a so to say. Are you gonna come to the so to say later? Oh, the so to say.
It's like a soiree.
Yeah, it's a recherche recherché soirée, and it's called a soda-say.
Recherché soda-say soirée. Okay.
Anyway, now that we've invented another new word.
Of course.
So to speak, some ground rules, so to speak. You need to know what you expect from each other. You need to know that what your expectations are for the book. And you need to know that you'll be friends no matter what. Because that's important.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What sort of things helped you get through writing a book with me and still be my friend while doing it? Just think of times that you were really upset. Like, what got you through those things?
I think, like most arguments or disagreements, it was time. Because usually when somebody comes up and opposes an idea you have, your first reflex is to get defensive. And usually when we would kind of back off a little bit and I'd have time to think about it, I would realize I needed to be a little bit more flexible and meet halfway with some things and kind of just choose my fights and step back and let you have your way. And also the acknowledging of, yes, this way is better than my way. And then ultimately, at the core of it all, she's my best friend, and I want her to always be my best friend. You know, we had that backbone there of, we have our disagreements, but at the end of the day, we've shared too much and we mean too much to each other to let something like this get in the way. It's not worth it. No book or boy back in those days, such things, you know, or person or anything was worth losing this friendship, because it was and is a very special thing.
Aww.
And I think it was the strength of our bond, ultimately, if I might say.
Oh, so to say. For me, I think it was actually, I did nothing. It was mostly you being practical and understanding that helped me be that in return. Because if I had been writing with somebody else that was like, then I would have been like, no, well, you know what? We're done. I'm taking my writing and I'm going over here and writing my own book.
Yeah.
Get your own.
Yeah. I don't doubt it, you know, and that's just our personality types. That's how we are.
So really you were helping yourself in the long run when you were being, you know, practical and understanding, and it helped to sort of take yourself out of your own mind and pretend that you're just looking at these two ideas from some complete strangers. Like, here's idea A and idea B.
Mm-hmm.
And just look at it completely unattached. Unbiasedly, yeah. Unattached. Like, oh, this isn't my idea. This is somebody else's idea. And look at it that way instead of my idea versus her idea. My idea is obviously better.
Yeah. Yeah. You kind of need to remove the emotional attachment to the scene. Like, you write a scene and you kind of form a bond with it and you form a relation with the characters in that scene. And so when somebody tries to mess with that, you can get kind of defensive about it. And you have to, I think if you're going to be a professional about anything too, or just a good sport in general, you have to be able to remove the emotional aspect and look at it in a more objectively.
Yeah. Kind of like what you said too that helped you was time. When you let me think of how to put this. We'd say, okay, write a scene about this person going to town and buying this thing. And I have a completely different idea on how to do it, but I trusted you to write it, but you didn't do it the way I want. And then you go and write it completely different, the antipodes of my idea. Mm-hmm. And then you read it back to me and I'm like, no, this is all wrong. And it's hard for you not to be like, excuse me, this is perfect. I love this scene. I just wrote it and it was wonderful. And then now mm-hmm. you're saying it's all wrong. So it's hard to also not get offended when you present something to someone and then they're like, no, mm-hmm. that's not how I thought it at all. But then if you go and give it some time, you can kind of come to where you're like, yeah, I can see where they're coming from. But then on mm-hmm. the opposite end of it, sometimes I would hold on to a scene so much that you would be obliging. You'd be like, okay, we'll find a way to keep it in. And then after time went by and after we wrote some more and we got through some other scenes or developed character more, it would come to the point where that scene was no longer relevant or I wasn't as attached to it and we come up with something better. And then it's mm-hmm. easy for me to just let go. So sometimes, you know, sometimes you can let the person have what they want and then they end up making up their mind later. Like, it's not that good. Now let's get rid of it.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a good lesson in the fact that people aren't mind readers and how easy it is to communicate and think that you have made yourself clear. And then that person interprets it differently because they're not seeing the images in your mind. And then you have to accept that the way they interpret it isn't bad or wrong. And maybe, in fact, they could come up with a better way. Or in many cases, a little bit of both. But it was funny because, like, if we were talking about somebody's house, I would always, like, just, it became a rule that I would picture it exactly the opposite of what Andrea did. If the door was on the left side, it was on the right side. If the stairs were in the front of the house, they were in the back of the house. Everything was reversed. That's how our minds work.
Yeah, but just basically opposite. We drew a blueprint and then would just flip it and that would be how you imagined it.
Yes, exactly.
So the dining room was east facing and the living room was west. No. You walk in, the living room's west facing, the dining room is or the living room's east facing, the dining room's west facing. No.
Yeah. So it's, you know, learning to be flexible and work with that. I think I say it all the time in life and in everything. The key is
communication.
That is, people say it, but it really is like the key to everything. Just talk things through and you'll work it out. And don't be too stubborn.
I was going to say, and stubbornness. But, you know, there are some good things to writing with your best friend. Sometimes you'll have an idea in your head and you'll say, what about this? And they're like, oh, yeah. And it's like, I really want to write this scene, but maybe you could write it because I don't have time. That happened a lot. Mm-hmm. And then they would go write it and then they would actually write it better. And then you're like, oh, that's actually good. I'm surprised. I didn't think you could write that well. and then you're excited.
yeah. No, that's true. Sometimes it happens that way. And I think, too, another key is trust. And that's easy to have in a friendship where you've built trust with each other. It's like, okay, I'm not letting you because, of course, you're going to let because you guys are writing the book together. But kind of trusting the other person, trusting their judgment, trusting that I know she's a good writer. She's not going to ruin this. She cares about the book, too. And being able to kind of let go. And I think maybe it took us a while to get to that point and stop holding on so tightly. Yeah, it can be hard. And it's a trusting thing of just, yeah, you can do this. You got this and it's going to be okay. And realizing that at the end of the day, it probably doesn't matter whether the flower bed is on the east side of the house or the west side of the house, as long as you both agree on the same thing. Eventually, if you know, and that's where blueprints come in, like you said, but some things just don't matter. So like when you're like, oh, her shirt has to be pink. And it's like, okay, that's fine. I mean, I imagine this really pretty blue shirt, but okay, we can do pink. Sure. That works. And then you paint a pretty pink shirt in your mind and there you go.
Or the fairies from Sleeping Beauty make it blue, no pink.
Yes, that was us in the early days of writing until splash, it just became
blue. Well, you know what? That happens. And then it turns purple. And then it's like, why didn't we think of this in the beginning? Purple, of course.
Yeah.
Duh.
Pretty purple. Mm-hmm. The color of royalty.
Yes, indeed. So I kind of want to get into our scenes because I'm excited about how ridiculous it's going to be.
So it's going to be ridiculous.
The plan was to try.
Mine is, I mean.
I think, April, you already mentioned this, but it was to try to write a scene as the other person in the other person's style, which is just way harder than I thought it would be. Mm-hmm. And honestly, just, I don't even know. But, and then we're going to read them. We're going to maybe discuss, oh, yeah, that sounds like me. That sounds like me. And then we're going to try to see if we can merge the two somehow.
I forgot we were even doing that. That will be interesting.
Yeah, we're going to try to merge it.
All right.
We might have to impignorate some of the stuff, but we'll see. I like how petrichor is the word of the day, but we've seen the funny one more.
It seems more applicable right now.
It's mortgage. Okay, so do you want to go or should I?
Why don't you start it off?
Okay, I'll start it off. Let me lean to my mic. Okay. This is a scene in the voice of April. Two cups sifted confectioner's sugar, Isabel read to herself. She swiped a stray strand of hair from her face with the back of her hand, indubitably smearing flour on her forehead. Two cups, she repeated, going to the sugar tin to make sure she had enough. She was taking measures to ensure everything was perfect for Lydia's birthday party. Running to the grocery store for extra supplies would throw things off. A breeze whispered by the kitchen window, teasing the curtains and imploring Isabel to slow down and take a deep breath. After taking that moment, she saw there was plenty of sugar and went back to the recipe, only now catching the faint scent of burnt cake on the before pleasant breeze. She hurried to the oven and yanked on the door handle. A wave of heat attacked her face and caused her eyes to water. She fanned at the warmth, then pulled the cake out and tossed it on the countertop. The bottom The bottom was most definitely burnt. She bent over the offending confection, examining the edges with the critical eye. She'd have to let it cool before removing it from the pan and giving it a thorough inspection. "What's that smell?" Marcus's voice echoed through the kitchen hall. Isabel swiped up a kitchen towel and hurried to the doorway to fend off her brother. You get out of my kitchen!" she waved the towel at him, reminding herself of a bullfighter. "Easy there, Izzy. I was just following my nose to something delicious," he coaxed. His eyes slipped past her shoulders to the cake pan on the counter. "Though catching a glance at it now looks a little burnt, doesn't it?" Marcus, you get out right this instant. You're going to draw attention and then Lydia's going to find out. Marcus easily slipped past her to inspect the bowl of softened butter. "Oh, what's this?" He swiped his finger through it, thinking it was already made into frosting. "Marcus, do not!" It was too late. Her brother licked the butter off his finger with a devious grin, fully expecting the sweet treat. His triumphant, pleased look slowly melted into ash and distaste. "Gosh, Isabel, maybe you could do with a few more cooking lessons." Isabel crossed the kitchen floor, hands on her hips, sliding a wooden spoon out of the utensil crock as she approached. Marcus instinctively raised his hands, knowing full well his sister intended to give them a good smack. "Take it easy. Get your hands out of my frosting. Get yourself out of my kitchen. Get out!" She swung the spoon to point towards the door, unwittingly knocking the cake pan off the counter. The two siblings watched as it clattered to the floor, spilling warm cake crumbs everywhere. Isabel turned her furious eyes on her brother, an outrage of volcanic proportions boiling up inside her, when another voice came from the kitchen doorway. "Hi, hi, hi," Lydia said. She paused just inside. Her eyes roamed the quarreling siblings and then fell on the disheveled cake. "Oh, how sad. Somebody lost their snack." Isabel threw her hands up in the air. "Well, happy birthday." That's it.
No, that was amusing. I don't think you did. I think you did pretty good.
Writing the scene or writing as you?
Writing as me. It's a terrible scene. I'm just kidding. I'm a terrible writer, so what can I say? No, I mean, I think the thing is, maybe for both of us too, our styles are kind of adaptive. Like, it felt kind of like something that would be in our book. So like you said, you at least achieved the April Andrea mix, but you threw in some flourishes and some stuff that for sure I know that you as a writer probably wouldn't take the time to put in. I was talking to Matt, my husband, about it. And as I was writing the scene, I was giving him commentary here and there on my scene. And I said, my writing is kind of, it's like frilly, like lace and pretty, pretty. Andrea's is like a samurai sword and you stepped in. Whoosh, whoosh. That was the description I gave him.
Well, I think of your writing as like a warm country kitchen with a breezy curtain window. And mm-hmm. I guess for my, I don't know how I would describe my writing. I like the samurai sword or like.
I just think of yours as kind of to the point, like blunt. To the point, but not in a boring way.
Yeah.
You have a uniqueness about you that makes your writing interesting.
Yeah, very much warm country kitchen, and that's, you know, the swiping of the hand with the flower on her forehead, the breeze whispering the kitchen window. That was almost directly plagiarized from Benjamin Bradley because I had just read it and I was like, I know, she likes windows and breezes. Catching the faint scent of a burnt cake on the before pleasant breeze was very much an April thing. I would have just said only now smelling burnt cake or something.
Yeah.
I used hurried a lot because you like that word in your old writings.
Apparently in Benjamin Bradley book, I like that.
Yep, hurried. And then my brother Jeff made his way into my book, this story.
I wasn't sure whether it was your brother or mine, but you're right. The way he was acting was definitely more your brother.
Yeah.
My brother would have been talking about
life,
and yours would just be a nuisance.
What's this? Oh, get out. What's this? And then he pushes past and he goes to lick the butter and then it's butter and he's like, oh, and then he says, oh, it's your cooking. And the dialogue, I tried to match yours because you have like this very old fashioned, good old fella kind of dialogue, probably mainly because you write a lot of historical romance, but like Easy There, Izzy, and
I mean, especially you had just read Benjamin and he's very like laid back. So his dialogue is very laid back.
Very old fashioned. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Take it easy. Yeah. But the get your hand out of my butter, get yourself out of my kitchen, get out.
I love that image of Friar Tuck from Robin Hood knocking the sheriff back with his belly. Get out of my church.
Oh, instinctively raising his hands, knowing full well his sister intended to give them a good smack. The good smack part, that reminds me of you too, so.
Yeah.
And then the friend, hi, hi, hi. I had to put that in there, you know, that's our...
I know, that was good, yeah.
Hi, 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 hi. How sad, somebody lost their snack. That was when I was getting tired, and I was like, okay, well, we gotta end this. Time to call April. Somebody lost their snack. Happy birthday.
Yeah, mine very much, like, toward the end, you'll see, but it kind of just like, well, okay, this needs to end now, so end.
Well, why don't you, without further ado, and no more to hoobahoo, read your scene.
Okay, I'll read my scene. And this was the product of a very frazzled mind. I'm sorry if you're offended by how I write this. So,
I know, I'm kind of scared.
It might be okay at first, but we'll see. Everyone knew the secret to a good cake was the right amount of vanilla. Glinda added a drop with a small flourish. She leaned over, sniffed the bowl, then added another generous douse. It was still missing something, though. She crossed her arms, tapping her fingers rhythmically. All senior personnel to the bridge. She sighed and set the bowl of batter in the preserver, then removed her apron and brushed away remaining specks of powdered sugar off her uniform. In the hall, she met Jared on his way to the bridge. Haven't forgotten my party tonight, have you, Glenn? She feigned disinterest with a small shrug of her shoulders. Of course not. I'll come if I have time. Aw, such a party pooper. If you have time, as if you can't make time for your best friend. He gave his disarming grin, but she didn't let it crack her demeanor. The birthday cake was a surprise, and she wasn't about to spoil it. They reached the bridge, and Glinda took her place on the bridge. We've detected an unidentified vessel on our radar, Captain, her first mate said. They'll be within communications range in 2 minutes. An asteroid miner, maybe? Glenn said. Not unless asteroid miners have changed their methods of late, Jared replied from his place at the long-range analysis station. I'm just throwing garbage out here in my terms. This vessel is equipped with enough brusonite to transport us halfway across the century, and it's moving fast. Soon the comm chimed, and Captain Fiersch, that's her last name, by the way, this was messy writing, answered it. The view screen frizzled for a second, then a green scaly being appeared on the other end. To Captain Glinda Fiersch of GR-2500 class vessel Dogfight. The creature hissed through pointed teeth. You have encroached on our territory, and we advise you to leave at once. I don't understand. This route is open to through traffic as long as we pay the tariff. Through traffic. There was a sign floating in the air. It's like, open to through traffic. Not anymore, the reptilian creature said with a lazy blink of his purple eyes. This route is now under Telgorian administration. We advise you to move away or things might get fuzzy. We've no intention of...
Sorry. Things might get fuzzy.
Yes. Oh, man. We've no intention of changing course. As you are well aware, the wilds are strewn with vagrant scavenger vessels. Yours is the most direct route through. We will pass through peacefully and leave you be. Are you certain you wish to pursue this course, Captain? Quite. She was about to cut the channel when the view screen flickered and several small square feeds appeared. They seemed to be various crew members from the Dogfight, the name of their ship. Other races prefer militant methods. I'm not sure how familiar you are, Captain, with the Telgorian, but we employ other means of persuasion. The revealing of the darkest secrets and intents. The view screen zoomed in on a feed of Groth, the ship's security officer, painting in his quarters, a beautiful scene of wisteria and jasmine. Glinda cut a glance at the 7-foot Mythian who might have been blushing beneath his scars and tusks. I had no idea you were so artistic, Groth, Jared remarked. And of course you have your secrets too, Captain, the Telgorian purred. I believe there's a certain surprise you wouldn't want a certain someone to know about. Sorry, I gotta stop to laugh. A sequence of her from moments ago in the cafeteria preparing Jared's cake appeared on the screen. Are you baking, Captain? Her first mate asked. She heard a snigger and knew it came from Jared. She straightened her uniform. It's a hobby. She focused her attention on the blue screen. Call me back when you have a point to make. She cut the channel. I don't know what that guy's after, but we have a birthday party to attend. Maintain maximum speed and keep an eye on the skies. I have a cake to bake.
I liked that. I need to put it in my book.
I mean, it should be a random vessel, and then all of a sudden this vessel's called in to aid your people or something.
Oh, that was funny.
I don't know if it's anything you ever would have written, but I just had fun with
it. The very beginning reminded me of my writing.
Right, I kind of lost my way partway
through.
Yeah,
you did like to use fancy words that I wouldn't use, but the bitey style was there. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah. And then completely not taking yourself seriously is actually something I do in my sci-fi.
Yeah, and I kind of knew that, so I kind of let myself go with it. And as I let go in that way, I paid less attention to how I was writing, mm-hmm. and I think I morphed to my style, but your type. I don't know, your type of story. In a crazy way.
Well, I liked it, though.
I started cracking up when I'm sitting there writing, and he's like, a certain secret, a certain someone wouldn't want to know, and I just started laughing. I had to tell Matt about it because
it's like, oh no, keep it to myself. Oh no, not that, Jared, like, look away.
Like these. The backstory is that these guys don't have a good understanding of like humans and stuff, so they think that these things are like real secrets, but they're not,
like,
really
serious,
plus
yeah.
The captain Plus, the captain has no like dark secrets, so she doesn't even care. She's like, she's a good person, and she's just like, whatever. Dude, okay, fine. We're gonna continue through.
That's funny. That reminds me of the alien that comes to Earth in one of my books. He thinks that we talked about it in our tea party last episode. Mm-hmm. He thought that honor and glory was gained by how many groceries you brought in at one time. And so to impress the girl he loved, he brought in a whole trunk of groceries in two arms in one trip. Yeah. And she was just like, eh. So what? And he's like, isn't this honor to you people?
I have seen this on social media.
That actually, I think I enjoyed it. I think the two scenes very accurately depict our two different writing style.
Yeah, definitely the settings that we went
fluffy,
for.
Fluffy, warm kitchen with a silly brother and a wooden spoon, and then you're just like, yeah, what are you? Yeah, hit me with the best shot. Yeah, okay, whatever, we have a party to attend.
Yep.
So how would we merge those?
That's a good question.
That's kind of a good example of how we would be going into something with two completely different ideas, and we're like, because you have the aliens coming and ruining the surprise, and honestly, in this situation, I would be like, yours is better, let's use it.
So I'm curious. Like, I kind of expected that you would probably write an old-fashioned-ish scene, since that's kind of all you have read of my stuff. What were you expecting me to write?
I wasn't really expecting... I didn't have any idea.
Okay.
I was thinking you probably would go with something Star Wars-y. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, spacey, probably.
Yeah. Yeah,
because that's usually what I've been writing lately, and what you've been hearing from me.
Right, we kind of both went to what was freshest in our minds from each other.
Yeah,
I mean, makes sense.
You've written Star Wars stuff, but I haven't read it lately, mm-hmm. so I couldn't. I was trying to remember that old stuff, the old mm-hmm. Star Wars stuff. Like, I remembered there was a there was like a space RV that this guy was staying in, but I don't remember any details well enough to draw from it.
Like, Voringer lived in an RV.
Yes, I love
it. I don't know if it was, I think maybe it could go into space. Like, you could park it, like, on a planet's surface, but I think it could go into space because yeah. they ended up kind of bumbling through space in it.
I want to read that now. You should send
it. I missed that. That was a good story. I enjoyed, I mean, I never finished it, but I enjoyed what I wrote of it.
Yeah, but, I didn't have enough of that to
mm-hmm. I mean, that's my fault. I was tasked with supplying.
Yeah, did you even read any of my stuff?
I started to, and then I had to go do something and got really busy.
Boring.
No, I was just like, okay, sci-fi. Okay, yeah, I can do that.
You're like, yeah. Oh, you know, I don't take any exception to being referred to as a samurai with my writing. That's
Oh, no, I didn't mean it at all as a negative thing either.
I'm just saying.
Samurai is cool.
People might like appreciate the frilly lacy thing, but no, but wait, heck yes, I want to be a samurai writer. That's mm-hmm. amazing. Mm-hmm. You can have the frilly lace curtain.
I value diversity and what's the word I'm looking for?
Tahubahu.
Yes, tahubahu.
Petrichor.
When it comes to writing. Yes, petrichor and tahubahu. You know, range, versatility. There's something specific. I write the style that fits the book I'm writing, mm-hmm. but ultimately I'm still me. And I think that each of us are that way. You know, our writing's going to have that unique flavor, but I wouldn't like to be, and I think you agree, put into a specific box, like so many writers are, you know, mm-hmm. you read John Grisham, he's John Grisham. You read Nicholas Sparks, it's some froofy, sad, sappy ending story. And Yeah, so I want to write many different things.
But first, Benjamin Bradley.
Of course. Anyway, as far as morphing the scenes.
Yeah.
We could have this family on the ship. They're stationed on it together as part of this. And so it's kind of Firefly, the combination of the Old West and the futuristic. And so this big ship in space. And so if you serve on the ship, typically your family is going to be with you, which kind of happened in Star Trek. That's how they were. And so the girl from your book might be baking the cake on the ship. Maybe she's one of the senior. Maybe it is. Maybe there are two parties
Jared
and they're both
Lydia's birthdays. They're twins. Jared and Lydia are twins.
Oh, there we go. Yeah, they're twins. And so they are working together. Yes. They want a surprise. Glinda. They call her Glenn. Glenn Fierce.
Should put her in my book. And then she's friends with Jared, so she wants to make the cake. Yeah,
it's her BFF. And so then the thing happens with the people and such, but also that reptilian creature and your brother, they're kind of the same thing. An interruption.
You know what is when she cuts them off and is like, forget it, we're not going to listen to you. Maybe he morphs on board or whatever and goes in and bugs Isabel. And it's the reptilian guy. He comes on board and is like, what's this? And he tries to annoy her to prevent them from, you know, of course it's harmless and he doesn't accomplish anything.
Yes, but he thinks he will. And I had this whole, like, backstory or this explanation for this reptilian species. And they can travel in time. And that's one of the ways that they can, like, manipulate people. And so my husband actually gave me an idea that I didn't end up going with just because it didn't flow how I wanted it to. But if I had more time to write, it could have been amusing. And his was, like, getting caught in some kind of time loop where she kept like messing up the cake and then going back in time, trying to get it right. So I was like, well, maybe the friend finds out. And so she gets stuck in a time loop and the goal is for the friend to not find out about the cake. And so these alien species were potentially going to start messing with the timeline. And then all of a sudden time resets and she's baking a cake again. And it's like, wait a minute, what's going on? But I just didn't get that far with it.
That would have taken way too long.
Exactly. Exactly. That's the untold story that maybe happens in the future.
She just wants to bake a cake.
It's a hobby.
She kind of reminds me of Lieutenant Grash a little bit.
Yeah, I think I was kind of channeling Grash a little. You know, her name, Fierce Grash.
Fierce Grash.
She has.
Glinda Grash.
Like, I must ask you a question. But I'm shaving it for later.
Retroche. Maybe that's Lieutenant Grash's cousin, Glinda.
Yes, Glinda and Grash. You could write a spinoff about them.
Well, that was fun.
That was fun. Hopefully everybody thought it was fun.
Everyone enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. It's just a glimpse into our fabulous years of friendship.
Indeed.
See, we didn't even get into an argument. That's how you write with your friend.
Right there. Right there.
Right there. Yep. That is the arcane example. Not arcane, but you know. Well, actually, it could be to some.
That's a friendship as pleasant as petrichor itself.
Oh, man. I closed my scorekeeping book and everything. There we go. 3-3, we're tied.
There you go.
Well, our haiku for this month, it's so sad that we're only doing one episode a month now because I liked doing the haiku.
I know, that was true. And we decided to switch to one episode a month, at least for the time being. Maybe
too busy, just too busy.
Yeah, too much in life going on, but we definitely, it's always a pleasure recording with you, my dear.
Oh, of course, naturally, yes, of course. I am a pleasant person to be around, after all. anyway, our haiku theme is friendship naturally. I wrote like five. There, I have like six or seven friendship haiku, but I only can recite one. So here's mine. I'll just go. The essence of April and Andrea. That's not the haiku. We sit and we write. The silence is comfortable for us two old friends.
Mm-hmm. I like that very much.
Oh, good.
Mm-hmm. It's a good haiku.
I was trying to think of the essence, like I said, you know, sitting, mm-hmm. writing, being quiet, two old friends sounded cozy.
Yes. I wanted to use recherche in my haiku, but I ran out of time and I had to use a pre-existing haiku that I had written the other day.
We are recherche. That's five.
Yeah, I mean, I could have done it. I just kind of ran out of time. Okay. So I'll do recherche. Another recherche one another time. Recherche. Anyway, here's mine. 16 years, they thought, gazing at the starlit sky. What an adventure.
Aww, I want to go look at stars with you now.
Something that we've done many times over many the times. Years.
It's one of the most romantic things people do, but they never think to do it to their friends now, do they? Well, maybe they do.
Indeed.
Well, everyone's always like, I want to go stargazing with my boyfriend. It's like,
What about your best friend? You can sit there and have deep conversations about the universe and reptilian cake-ruining aliens and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
Yep.
That's definitely fun. Yeah.
It is.
That's definitely something you wouldn't. I forgot the word. What's
that word? Impregnate.
I was going to say impregnate, but.
Impregnate.
Something you'd impregnate. That sounds like a country person trying to say impregnate.
I know, impregnate. That's what I was thinking.
Oh man.
Well, on that note, it's probably getting late and apparently we're silly and tired, so I guess we should wrap it up.
We'll talk to you next month. Next month is June, so I don't know what that means. Have a good night. Okay. Cuz I guess I'll just have to
Yeah, leaning in is much better. See, I'm not. Okay. I'm not super leaned in. If I super lean in, I'm like this.
I'm gonna put that in the after
mouth breather.